Think of the Children is a very popular meme on the internet. Think of the children. Think about what we are doing to the children. Think of society through the lens of a child's eyes. Do we do that enough in King County? Do we do that enough in Seattle? Do we do that enough in the state of Washington? There's an article over at My Northwest from Jason Rance, local hero, local radio talent over at KTTH, all around good guy. And he was talking about a couple of yearbooks featuring anti-police imagery and messages supporting student activism around Black Lives Matter. The Woodinville High School yearbook featured an image showing student protesters. In the photo, one girl holds up a sign reading ACAB. The same photo was featured in a video collage at their graduation ceremony last week at Bonnie Lake High School. A part of the yearbook adopted a similar theme. The selection on BLM activism featured art of a white cop beating a black woman as her white friend defends her, even if it even offers in to donate to the BLM political movement. And I was thinking about this in terms of my fun little political lens that I view things through, because I have a background in political theory. And when you study political theory, one of the things that you study in particular is trends and themes throughout history, because as the very famous saying goes, if history does not repeat itself, then it most certainly rhymes. And the reason that we have to focus on that phrase in particular when it comes to children is because children are incredibly impressionable. By every single study out there, children are basically like filthy sponges, and they take up all of the stuff that we pour in front of them, all of the information that we pour in front of them. They just kind of soak it up and accept it as the God's truth. So just as an example, I'm looking at the photo right now of it's a bunch of girls and a guy, and they're all holding up fun signs. And one of the signs says, if you're not angry, you're not paying attention. Oh no, I am very angry because I am paying attention. The other one is, use your white privilege to end your white privilege, whatever that means to those two little girls. Another one says, why is ending racism so controversial? And finally, we get to the ACAB sign. What's so interesting about this as well is that ACAB is actually originally a white supremacist statement. All cops are bad, or all cops are bastards. That was originally used by skinheads all the way back in the 80s. A lot of people forget that fun little piece of information. So congratulations, little girl. You are in league with white supremacists and skinheads from the 1980s. Moreover, there's another sign that says only love can drive out hate. Black Lives Matter. And you know, what's a shame about this is that let's just take all of this kind of in one massive piece of information. Let's take this as one kind of massive analytical piece that we can kind of tear apart. BLM as an organization is garbage. BLM as an organization is basically just a massive grift, and anybody can see that. You raise over $100 million and you do nothing for your community. That is a grift. Your leader of your organization goes around and collects $20,000 to $30,000 for speaking engagements and consultation engagements, and then you go around buying huge homes in Georgia and in Topanga Canyon and all these places in Southern California. And then you install a $40,000 electric fence around those properties. You are a grifter. If you say that you are a Marxist and then you capitalize on the suffering of other people, as Patrice Cullors has done, you are a grifter, and your organization is a grift. But we can also be nuanced about it, and we can say, but the movement itself is a very good thing. And we can say that the activism around it is a very good thing. And we can say that these disparate little pieces all across the nation is actually a very good thing. When you see people going out there and they're protesting peacefully and they say that all lives matter or that black lives matter, and they walk down the street and they're all celebrating in their fun little teddy bears picnic as they walk around and they say, we believe that black lives matter. And then someone says, say his name. And then someone says, George Floyd. And everyone goes, yay, we all care so much about this. That is a great expression of Americanism. That is part of the American spirit. And for as much as I might disagree with it, I find the movement to be a wonderful balance, if you will. It's a wonderful kind of complement to what it means to be an American. But the organization, no. No, thank you. That is a grift of an organization. So why is it that these kids, have not been told that? Why is it that these children are viewing these two separate pieces as one thing? It's because their teachers are lazy. It's because their teachers are lazy and they don't care to actually separate these things so that these kids can actually have a well-rounded view of something that is as complicated as Black Lives Matter. And to talk about these kinds of things in such a way for children requires that amount of time investment. How much have I spent on that? About 3.5 minutes? It requires you to take 3.5 minutes out of your busy schedule as a public school teacher to say, BLM the organization bad, BLM the movement good, basically. That's all you have to do to explain that to children. Now, they're also holding up a sign that says, again, if you're not angry, you're not paying attention. As I said previously, no, I'm very, very angry, child, because you are being lied to. You are being lied to by public school teachers. You are being manipulated by public school teachers, and it's a real shame that we have an education system that lies to children in that way, so that they can't actually make that distinction for themselves and that they can't actually say, oh, you know, I support BLM, but the organization is garbage. That would be what? Well, that would be an adult take to have on that kind of issue. I'm looking at the other picture as well. I'm seeing as Jason Rance pointed out, there is an officer attempting to beat a Black woman. She's just kind of sitting there. And there is a white woman who kind of looks like, almost looks like Sinead O'Connor, if Sinead O'Connor was a member of Poison. Like, if Sinead O'Connor and Bret Michaels had a baby, that's what this little drawing would look like. And this officer is attempting to beat this Black woman for some unknown crime. Meanwhile, in the background is a little Black child cheering this on. I have no idea what this artist was trying to portray. And underneath this, they have quotations from some of the students, and one of them reads, I 100% support it, meaning BLM, and I do feel that racism and inequality is unnecessary, and we could live happily. That is what your public education system is getting you. That is what your fun little public education system is getting you. Misinformed, ill-informed children who cannot have nuanced ideas on anything. So I ask you to please, please, if you're out there and you're a public school teacher, please think of the children, because you're doing a terrible job. If I could give a lecture to these kids out there that Jason Rance is talking about at these two separate high schools, the lecture would basically go like the beginning of this show, where I would say, hey, listen, the idea of ACAB comes from white supremacists. It comes from skinheads. It is not something that we should be associated with. And I would go to them and I would say, hey, BLM, the organization, is a massive grift. Here is Exhibit A. Here are the two buses that they bought that are valued at $250,000 a piece. Do you know what they do? They drive around. They drive around and they go around protests. They don't even go to the protests. And they've got TVs on them, and they've got refrigerators on them. You know whose money went to buy those? People who gave money to those organizations. Why hasn't BLM donated any money, not a single penny, to something like, oh, I don't know, a housing project? Why don't they build a school like how LeBron James built something? Why haven't they invested in the community? Why haven't they taken their $100 million and done something with it? Why are they making so much money with their fun t-shirts and the copyright of their image? Why is it that EA, the game company, when they decided to come out with Madden 2021, they had to go into the game to edit in Black Lives Matter flags? Which, by the way, they're paying for that, right? They're paying for the copyright on that image. Why is that the case? You know, as I said at the beginning of this segment, that if history doesn't repeat itself, it most certainly rhymes. I want to remind people that in Cambodia, let's go all the way back to the 1960s, all the way back to the 1970s, when the communists took over Cambodia, one of the things that they told the children was that they needed to re-educate their parents. that their parents, who had grown up under French colonialization, French colonies, that their parents needed to be re-educated. And so what they would do is they would have all of the heady intellectuals, they would bring them all into these massive huts. And we're talking doctors, lawyers, professors, anybody that they viewed as being sympathetic to the bourgeoisie. And they would have them sit on their hands and knees in nice little rows like they were in a classroom. And they would have the children read Marxist text to them to try to re-educate them. Now, of course, these professors and lawyers and doctors at the time, they had read Marx when they were getting their education, but they were going over it again. And they would have the children walk up and down the aisle with their parents on their hands and their knees as the other child was reading Marx. And if a child felt as if the adult in the room was not paying attention, they would whip them with bamboo hard so that they would bleed. And the idea behind it was to try to defeat the old way of thinking symbolically for the children. They would walk up and down the aisle, and if they thought someone wasn't paying attention, again, they would hit them with a piece of bamboo. Now, if they thought that that person was harboring subversive thoughts, later, they would report them to the overseers, and they would say, this person was whispering something to somebody else. They were whispering bourgeoisie propaganda to someone next to them, or they were conspiring against the proletariat. And then the leaders would take that person out of the hut and they would drag them somewhere and they would put a bag over their head and suffocate them to death. Now, you might be saying, Jack Stein, what does that have to do with a high school yearbook that has ACAB and BLM and all this other kind of stuff? In a way, we are teaching children to persecute their parents in the same way intellectually. Of course, not physically, because that's ridiculous. But in a way, these teachers, these high school teachers, are demonstrating to their children, or at least they're trying to influence these students, that their parents need to be re-educated. And the way that we do that is with all of these pithy slogans and these non-arguments. So in a sense, when our parents push back against these ideas, what are they? If your mom or your dad comes out and they try to talk to you and they try to say, hey, Shelley, the whole BLM movement is a very, very good thing, but the whole BLM organization is actually a very, very bad thing. It's actually very, very corrupt, and we should be very careful of it. My suspicion is that that child has been primed to suddenly think, oh, wait a minute, my mom and dad are racists. My mom and dad are committing thought crime in the same way that those children in Cambodia were told that their parents were committing thought crime. BLM is a Marxist organization, openly. I don't say that as a pejorative. They're a Marxist organization. That's fine. They talk about capital and they talk about everything, the democratization of the workforce and all this kind of stuff, right? This is what they are trying to achieve. They love unions. They love all these kind of Marxist ideas. When it becomes difficult is when you offer that to children and you say anything outside of that is the enemy. Anything outside of these concepts is the enemy. So you have this in your yearbook. You have a picture of a police officer attempting to beat a black woman. Is there any nuance in that imagery? By the way, directly behind that police officer is the Statue of Liberty. So in the image itself, what you are implying is that the Statue of Liberty is overseeing the beating of a black woman in the street. What does that tell children? It tells them that their country is a racist and awful place. There's so much that you can pull from these two images. Again, use your white privilege to end your white privilege. What does that mean to these two? These girls look like they might be 17 years old, maybe 18 years old. What does that mean to those two little girls? If I had them on Cairo Nights and I pushed them on that issue when I said, tell me where my white privilege is. Explain to me where is it on my body? Tell me where my white privilege is. Where's my wife's white privilege? Because she's biracial. Where is her white privilege? She's a Filipino woman. Can you explain to me where her white privilege is? Tell me how she's supposed to move through society. Tell me about this sign that says, this is another one that's kind of hidden, but it says, why is ending racism so controversial? It's not controversial to anyone. Not anyone whatsoever. Where do these kids get these ideas? Where do they get this perception? Well, they get it from people who we trust, people who we've paid to teach our kids. And I got to tell you right now, I don't think that they're thinking of the children. I think that they're thinking about revolution. I think that they're thinking about what it would look like to live in a Marxist utopia. You could say I'm being hyperbolic. Well, I don't think so. These are extreme ideas. ACAB is an extreme idea. Again, it is a white supremacist skinhead idea from the 1980s. You don't believe me, go look it up. I don't care. I've got sources. So why are they not thinking about the children? Why are they not thinking about your children? Why are they going out there and why are they spreading this propaganda? Again, it's because they're thinking about revolution. And I'm going to say to you, maybe we should start thinking about the kids. Maybe we should start thinking about whether or not we want our children in public school systems if they're going to be dumping kids' heads filled with this kind of stuff. I'm not even going to go as far as to say that it's nonsense, but what I will say is this. At what point in time is there a balance in that system? I don't see a lot of signs in this fun picture in this article over at My Northwest. I don't see a lot of fun signs out there saying free market's good. I don't see a lot of signs over here saying that freedom and independence good. I see only love can drive out hate. BL, that's what I don't see a lot of kind of, hey, I'm so happy that we live in the most prosperous and free country in the world. I don't see any of that. I see a bunch of kids holding up Marxist and white supremacist slogans that went through the public school system, and this is why it's so disappointing, and this is why I ask you, please.
Oh, won't somebody please think of the children?
It's something that we've kind of laid at the wayside for I don't know how many years, and now it's coming up. You've allowed revolutionaries into the public school system, and now they are filling your kids' heads with this kind of stuff, and they are normalizing it. And it should be frightening. It should be startling to you. It certainly is startling to me. When I read this article over at My Northwest, I thought to myself, man, I cannot believe that not only did they allow these kids to do that without any context whatsoever, but that it was celebrated to the point where that they put it in the actual yearbook itself. Hey, listen, we'll take a really quick break. When we get back, we have a whole lot more in this show. Going to be a huge show today, particularly with some good news and some Shane Peterson. We'll be right back after this. Before we get into this whole debacle over at the courthouse and everything that's going over there with Regan Dunn, I wanted to just remind everybody that take it easy over the next couple of days. It's going to be hot, and I run a lot. And I'll tell you that the last time that temperatures got really high, I made kind of a fool of myself. And I decided that I was going to get like really heavy duty running, and I was going to go really far, and I was going to get really sweaty, and I was going to be, my abs were going to be rippling in the sun, and my well chiseled jaw was going to just have sweat dripping from it. So I'm running and I'm doing my thing, and I'm probably running about a 6:30 pace, maybe 6:40 pace. And all of a sudden, I feel this wave come over me, this kind of dizzying wave. And I went, oh, no. And I started to slow down, and I realized that I was sweating a little bit too profusely. And instead of having women look at me and say, wow, look at that handsome man running down the way, it was like, man, what is wrong with that guy? He looks like he's about to throw up. And I ended up having to stop, and I tried to run again, and nothing was really working out. So I had to call the missus. And I'll tell you this right now, that when you are attempting to do something that is the definition of manliness, I'm going to run 13 miles and halfway through it, you have to call the missus to come pick you up because you got a little bit too hot. That is not a very good look. So be careful over the next couple of days. I think that it's pretty common sense just to say, if you're feeling a little off, slow down. Like, take it down just a couple of notches. Take a page out of your Uncle Jay's book and exercise some common sense. So speaking about common sense, King County Councilmember Regan Dunn is pushing to condemn the park near the downtown Seattle courthouse. looking at some pictures around City Hall Park. Pretty rough. These were taken by Jason Rance. And so safety concerns, as we all know, have swirled around the 3rd Avenue entrance to the King County Courthouse in downtown for years. We're talking stabbings, beatings. A gentleman was arrested there for assaulting somebody and then released, within 25 minutes or something like that. Some insane number. So now, King County Councilmember Regan Dunn is saying, hey, that park is a public safety hazard, and I don't blame them for having that position. Here's what that sounded like this morning on the G and Ursula show.
Our prosecutor says there are 2 to 5 assaults every single week, as reported by our employees. And so it's really unfortunate. So what I've decided to do is move that King County condemn City Hall Park and take ownership of that park. And there's a lot of reasons behind it, but one of the problems we have is that the city of Seattle polices that area, including the sidewalks, and we only have jurisdiction on the buildings or land we own. And so because of this incredible escalation in crime, I'd like to condemn it so that we can take it into ownership. Maybe put a pavilion on site and other services, and then do proper policing so that we don't see, you know, murders. And for example, a man was accused of kicking a dog to death just the other day, and a lot of other challenges that we can avoid if we have proper eyes on the ground and provision of services there.
There's a phrase that I love. It's called not in my backyard. NIMBY. You've heard it before. NIMBYists. And the idea is that anytime a community or a city wants to try to improve itself, like let's say they want to build a new housing complex, or they want to build a public pool, or they want to build a new lighthouse, I don't know, there's always somebody out there who says, hey, wait a minute, that is in my view, or that is in my neighborhood, and I do not want that, whatever it is, that public housing, that lighthouse, that gigantic birdcage, it doesn't really matter. I don't want that in my backyard. One of the things I find so fascinating about this is that finally, after years, you have somebody coming out and saying, hey, I no longer want this in my backyard. And the question that I have to ask you, my very dear listener, is how long have you been saying, not in my backyard? Please do something about these homeless people. Please do something about this park. Please do something at Broadview Thompson. Please do something about the people who shoot up dope downtown. Please do something. And what do you get? What do you hear constantly? You hear that if you hold that position, that you are an evil, awful individual who does not care about homeless people, who couldn't care less about homeless people. And now we are beginning to see that once an annoyance hits a certain threshold, once an inconvenience, to put it lightly, hits a certain threshold, then all of a sudden you start seeing people at the very highest levels of government saying, yeah, you know, geez, maybe we should do something about it now. Maybe we should do something about it now. And I find, again, what's so interesting about the whole homeless thing is it doesn't really matter how much I talk about it on nights. It doesn't really matter how much anybody else talks about it. You have to actually have it affect that person, affect that individual. So for the council members out there, I think one of the reasons why they can kind of walk around and not have to talk about this kind of stuff is I don't think it really directly affects them in the way that it affects us normal people. I don't think that it affects them in the same way. Maybe emotionally it does, but I'm talking about on a day-to-day basis. So what are you going to do for people that this thing is kind of above them, or it's kind of, there's just not on their radar, or that they're using it to further a political agenda? Like, what do you do for those people? I think the only solution around this kind of stuff is to kind of, when somebody does come out and they say, this is what I would like to do for this park, you have to show that person the most amount of support. And you have to rally around that individual and encourage that behavior. You know, I was at a park today, and I saw a woman who was training a dog. This nice young couple had just purchased a couple of new little teeny tiny dogs. They kind of look like kind of Maltese kind of dogs. And they were rowdy, and they're little puppies, and they're running around. And clearly this young couple had no idea how to train dogs, right? So this dog trainer she's saying, listen, when you want them to do a specific behavior, you have to first celebrate that behavior when they do it so that they associate happy feelings with doing that behavior. And it was like a light bulb went off for this happy young couple, and they went, oh yeah, that's the way that we raise dogs. We have to do the same thing with politicians. That whenever they do something, however small, that we agree with, we have to treat them like they're little Maltese puppies. And we have to say, wow, good job. Wow, thanks so much. Hey, look at you wagging your tail. Hey, good job trying to do your job. And that is how you move society forward, I believe. Because again, politicians respond to incentives. They respond to that kind of stuff. This is why Sharma Sawant or Lorena Gonzalez or any of these figures can go around and continue to do this kind of behavior because they get celebrated for their inaction. Finally, when someone decides to do something about it, we need to really celebrate it. And I'm talking emails and thank you cards and whatever you can to try to encourage that individual so that they know that this is what their constituents want. And so that they know that it's not this kind of like NIMBYist behavior, but you're actually saying thank you for doing something, however small, and however much you might have disagreed with them on the past on this issue or that issue, you still take the initiative to say, thank you very much, in the same way that that nice young couple was saying, oh my God, you're so cute, to their little Maltese puppies. You do that when a politician does something that you like. We'll take a really quick break. When we get back, Shane and I are going to be doing a little bit of good news, and it's going to be a surprise, so stick around. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Carbon Night, Shane Peterson. We have yet to check in with you, Shane. How are you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing okay. It was kind of a really laid-back day for me. I didn't really work much, but cleaned all my dishes, did all my laundry. You know, I did some prepping. I watched a lot of criminal psychology videos.
That's such a meme.
It was a very productive day.
Shane, you didn't happen to check in with any national news, because that's what the good news has to do. You didn't have to check any national news talking about any kind of local Seattle stuff?
No, usually I just wait to show up and then have you tell me what's going on, because you're the one that reads a lot more about it than I do. I just show up and try to make everything sound pretty, and I just listen very carefully.
So I found that on about a dozen different national news outlets today, the story of the Seattle Pride event, the whole taking black pride with the reparations fees, the $50 reparations fees, the $10 that was all over the news at the national level. And I found myself so pleased with this because everybody out there had the same opinion that we had, Shane, which is that this is dumb and this is bad. And why would they do this? Why would these people at Taking Black Pride try to charge people $10 or $50 or whatever to try to get into this event? And so people were talking about it, and people were actually standing up, and I'm talking about, you know, like morning news and stuff like that. People were actually talking about it and saying, hey, did you guys hear what happened over in Seattle? And they were talking about it in such a way that made me think, hey, maybe when something like this is so egregious, people actually start paying attention to what's going on, and they no longer see it as like a fringe thing anymore, because it actually becomes much more mainstream, and then we can point it out for being the ridiculous thing that it is.
Yeah, the thing is after you talked about it yesterday, I did read Rance's article about it, and I did think about it a little bit, and I don't know, when I looked around some of the internet and looked at what some people were saying, you know, a lot of people were saying, it was more of like an implied, like, it would be nice if you could pay this, which I think people are hyperizing it too much. It doesn't make it any less ridiculous to be like, hey, you should pay because you're the color of your skin, like that just fundamentally is wrong.
Sure.
And after they got vocal about it, I'm pretty sure Seattle, the city of Seattle, stepped in and said, like, hey, yeah, it's like private or public property in the city of Seattle. You can't discriminate against people by the color of their skin or their race.
Right.
So, I mean, the fact that people are still blowing it up and looking at it on the news, it's just like what we talked about yesterday. It's silly. It's stupid. It doesn't make any sense. And I wish that we had other stories to talk about that would maybe be a little bit more beneficial than just talking about just people saying and doing ridiculous things. And that's what people flock to.
that's a valid point, Shane, but let me say this as well. Let me kind of supplement that argument by saying that the reason that this story is so important and the reason that we should focus on it is because no organization should even imply that because of the color of somebody's skin that they maybe should consider paying a certain amount, even if they were trying to be just kind of suggestive about it. No organization should even imply that to be the case. And Shane, here's my example to you. If there was an organization out there, let's just say it was taking white pride, if that was the name of the organization, and it was a pride event for white people, and they said, well, if you're a member of a minority community, in order to fund this organization, you have to think about chipping in between $10 and $50, everybody would say that that is a racist organization, and rightfully so, right?
Yes, but I don't know. It flip-flopping the argument, it makes sense and it's relevant. But the thing to me is just like me personally, I just try to not put any attention or emotion to it. And I feel like people should probably – that's what I mean by it, because you are correct, because it is ridiculous. It is wrong, mm-hmm. and it is something that should mm-hmm. be pointed out and called out. But at the same yep. time, I think that us as people should just be like – should be people just need to differentiate people, stories and people in the news that you should take seriously and things that you shouldn't, because there's stories and people on the news where people get really worked up about what people say, and they say ridiculous statements that aren't true. We've seen more of this in the past year than probably ever in history. So yeah. Let's think about it for a second. Let's all take a step back and look at certain issues and go, hey, is this that big of a deal? Is this worth me getting worked up or angry? No, probably not. So don't care yeah. about it. It's wonderful yeah. when you learn to not care. So what I'm saying to you lovely people is learn to not give a hoot, because you know what? Be your own owl. Be flying out there, because you're the owls. You're the Cairo Night Owls. And I'm Shane Peterson, and I appreciate
you. Wow, Shane. That was a good one, man. I threw that out at you kind of randomly, because I thought you were going to take it and run with it, Shane. And I got to give you one of these as a bit of a... That was a good job, Shane. You get a point for that, man, because that was a... You know, you talk about epic rants, and we talk about sticking it to the man. Shane Peterson, a.k.a. Sean Peterson, taking the high road in the argument and saying, why are we even focusing on this in the first place? And speaking of, by the way, Shane, in the next segment, because I am in excruciating pain, Billy Sunshine will be coming on for the entire segment, and we are going to be talking about gun control as it pertains to that gentleman who was shot and killed tragically today at a bus stop. So Billy is going to offer his very, very liberal views on gun control. So if you want to know what it's actually like to talk to a liberal menace about gun control in the United States, you want to hear how they formulate their arguments to arm yourself, stick around. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back after this.